As infections become harder to treat because of antibiotic resistance, scientists are enlisting help from bacteria's oldest enemy, viruses. So-called bacteriophages, literally bacteria eaters, are viruses that target bacteria. While researchers have known about them for a century and even used them to treat people, these biological agents have been largely ignored in most of the world since penicillin became available. Until recently, that is. Welcome to Prognosis, a podcast about health and science, medical technology, and the changes that are underway across the world. I'm your host, Michelle Faye Cortez. For our third season, we're delving deeply into the human cost of bacterial infections that can't be stopped by even our most potent antibiotics. The loss of these miracle cures has been described as one of the biggest threats to global public health. It spurred a search for alternatives to antibiotics. In this episode, Bloomberg's Jason Gale explores how that effort is leading scientists back to a Soviet-era-inspired treatment known as phage therapy that's saving the lives of patients who couldn't be cured with antibiotics alone. He also examines the discoveries being made in some of England's smelliest soils that promise to protect us against two major sources of deadly disease. Here's Jason.
This is Joel Grimwood. He's a retired chiropractor who lives at the end of a dirt road in the hills outside of Reno, Nevada, with Jasmine, his 50-pound bulldog pit bull terrier cross, and more recently, an orange second-hand tractor.
And it's got a loader bucket on the front and a scraper on the back. It's a what they call a midsize, so it's 35 horsepower, three-cylinder diesel, it's four-wheel drive. It can lift about 1,800 pounds.
Joel has big plans for it.
So we're going to redo the driveway here with it. Well, what I want to do is put a garden in over here. And it's, you know, at least a quarter acre.
Joel is 66. He wasn't always this active. In fact, a year and a half ago, he was gravely ill.
I practiced chiropractic for over 20 years on the North Shore of Lake Tahoe. In 2007, I had a cardiac arrest, and that ended that.
Joel had a diseased heart muscle that put him in cardiac failure. 5 years ago, he became so ill that he needed a heart transplant. To buy him some time while he waited for a donor organ, his doctors implanted a mechanical pump known as a left ventricular assist device.
Which is a pump that takes over for your left ventricle and pumps blood from your left ventricle to your aorta.
The device fitted in Joel's chest was powered via an electrical cord that exited his abdomen. And this cord, it was a direct connection between the inside of his heart and the outside world. Despite his best efforts to keep it clean, bacteria started growing inside the pump. Within a year, Joel was battling a potentially deadly infection.
I was in and out of the hospital for 3 years. I was on IV antibiotics most of that time, and they just never could quite knock it out.
Surgeons would scrape away dead tissue, vacuum up bacteria-laden material, and sterilize and dress an open wound that gradually grew to the size of a key lime. In Joel's case, antibiotics were subduing the germs in his bloodstream, but were powerless against their mushrooming source, the slime-forming bacteria growing on his implant. Scientists call the slime biofilm. As a survival strategy, bacteria build structured communities on surfaces, including on artificial hips and knees, pacemakers and catheters, even on airways of cystic fibrosis patients. This gunk is a fortress-like barrier that protects bacteria from antibiotics and the immune system. The propensity for bacteria to develop biofilms and prosthetic implants is a major threat to modern medicine. For instance, more than 1 million knee and hip replacement operations are performed annually in the United States alone, and the joint infections that result cost more than $1 billion in hospital bills.
You know, I was in trouble. I was going to die. I was getting that feeling, but I never lost the hope, the faith, the belief that I'd survive this. I don't think there was much point in thinking any other way. I had to stay positive.
Joel sent me pictures of what his chest looked like without the dressings. His gaping chest wound is about 6 inches long and the color of uncooked steak. I'm not especially squeamish, but being able to see directly into his body and identify the mushroom-shaped base of the pump, well, it made me feel nauseous. Joel desperately needed a new heart, but the bacterial slime growing on his heart pump made a transplant too dangerous. Four hospitals refused to put him on the wait list because of the infection risk. Removing the device would dislodge a lethal maelstrom of Staphylococcus aureus bacteria. If Joel was going to survive, he needed to get rid of the bacteria. And that was impossible with antibiotics alone.
In the last, I'd say, 6 months or so, I really got a sense of urgency because it just wasn't going away.
Hope was dwindling. That is until a fifth hospital offered Joel something else, a type of experimental treatment that had been courageously attempted there a couple of years earlier. It was subsequently tried with overall positive results in half a dozen patients. In March of 2016, Californian academic Tom Patterson became the hospital's first recipient. He got severely ill with an incurable bacterial infection. He was close to dying in the hospital attached to the University of California, San Diego, when his wife came up with one last option, an approach that flourished in the former Soviet Union under Stalinism, but hadn't been used in the U.S. for generations.
And that's phage therapy.
This is Stephanie Strathdy.
I'm an infectious disease epidemiologist and the Associate Dean of Global Health Sciences at UC San Diego, where I also co-direct a new phage therapy center called iPath.
The treatment involves using specially selected and prepared viruses to attack disease-causing bacteria. Professor Strathdy took that unconventional approach to save her husband, Tom, and its success led to Joel Grimwood and other patients getting it. In Tom Patterson's case, it was a last-ditch attempt to keep him alive.
He'd already had 7 cases of septic shock, and so it was either watch him die or do something drastic on my own, and I decided to try to save his life.
Professor Strathdy didn't set out to become an expert in phage therapy. In fact, she devoted decades focusing on the HIV epidemic. That got derailed somewhat in 2016.
My husband and I were on vacation in Egypt, and he acquired what looked like to be a stomach bug, but he got violently ill. He was eventually medevaced to Germany and then back home to UC San Diego, where our doctor friends were caring for him. And it turned out that he had a gallstone that caused a giant abscess in his abdomen, and inside that abscess lurked a superbug.
The infection was caused by a bacterium called Acinetobacter baumannii. It possessed so many drug resistance genes that it was untreatable. Professor Strathdy says she stopped counting the number of antibiotics her husband was given.
His infection was resistant to 15 antibiotics right off the bat, and it was only partially sensitive to 3. And in the few weeks that it took to get him back home to San Diego, it acquired resistance to those last 3 antibiotics, including colistin and meropenem. And those are considered last resort antibiotics.
The bacterium is nicknamed Arachibacter because of the veterans who have returned from the Middle East with the infection.
This is an organism I used to plate on my Petri dishes back in the 1980s at the University of Toronto, and it was considered a pretty wimpy organism back then. But it's acquired superpowers at the bacterial level because it's almost like a kleptomaniac. It steals antibiotic resistance genes from other bacteria, and when we're throwing antibiotics at an infection, this one is resistant, and it's just rubbing its hands together saying, okay, you got rid of my competition, now I can move in for the kill.
And it had Professor Strathdy's husband, Tom, firmly in its clutches. He was possibly hours away from death.
His doctors had given us the talk. They said, basically, there's nothing else that we can do. This organism is resistant to all antibiotics.
Desperate, Professor Strathdy clung to something she recalled from her undergrad days back in Canada.
Well, I have a very old degree in microbiology from the 1980s, and I had learned in my classes that phages are viruses that have naturally evolved to attack bacteria, and you can see how they work in a Petri dish, even though you can't visualize them with your naked eye or even with a light microscope. But what I didn't know is that phages had been used over 100 years ago to treat people with bacterial infections quite successfully for a time.
Professor Strathdee worked with scientists in Texas and the US military to acquire cocktails of phages that matched the bacteria poisoning her husband. Meantime, she worked with his doctors and the Food and Drug Administration to gain approval to use them on compassionate grounds.
The first batch arrived from Texas A&M University, and we inserted those into the tubes or catheters in his abdomen because that was closest to his infection. And we just hoped that nothing would happen because, we were worried that he could die of septic shock because essentially we were injecting a billion viruses into his body. And he remained stable. So 2 days later, we had phages arrive from the Navy, and those phages were considered to be more virulent. We injected those phages into his body, a billion phages per dose, and that was when he really started turning around.
While it's impossible to prove that it was phage therapy that saved Tom's life, what happened next was dramatic.
A couple of days after we began intravenous phage therapy, he lifted his head off the pillow and kissed his daughter's hand. And everybody in the ICU freaked out, including myself.
Doctors observed something very cool in Tom's case.
The bacteria had to make a genetic decision. It could either face the phage or it could face the antibiotic. And it decided to face the antibiotic. So it actually modified itself to become susceptible to antibiotics again.
This synergy between phages and antibiotics has occurred in other patients. After phage therapy, their superbug was no longer immune to antibiotics. And it's opened up a way of resurrecting failing antibiotic regimens.
If we can take advantage of the fact that phages can put selective pressure on bacteria to make them susceptible to some antibiotics again, then that would be a really important advance. Even if it saves just a couple, that could be a very important turning point in this whole global crisis that we're facing.
In the case of Joel Grimwood, whose chest was being slowly consumed by bacterial slime, phages are credited with doing something else as equally cool. After a 4-week course of intravenous phage therapy in combination with antibiotics, swabs of his open wound came back negative for staph.
It was like it ate the bacteria, and then when all the bacteria was gone, it just went away, it just died. But once I started taking the phage, there was a marked improvement in my energy level and how I felt. I'd say within a week, I started to notice differences.
Importantly, after 4 years, some 40 surgeries, and a multitude of medical treatments, he was finally eligible for heart transplant surgery. Doctors chalked up his surprising turnaround to phage therapy.
They qualified me for the transplant, and in 2 weeks, I got a heart.
Joel Grimwood and Tom Patterson epitomize the dramatic results that have revived interest in phage therapy to counter untreatable infections. But the basic research required to find and develop phage-based products, that's often frustrating and, well, sometimes downright gross work. It involves getting up close and personal with some large sources of bacteria.
What we can see here are some really healthy, lovely pigs. I think they're Gloucester Old Spots. These ones anyway, with the spotty.
That's Martha Clokey. She's a microbiologist who runs a research lab and teaches at the University of Leicester, roughly 100 miles north of London. She's responsible for some key phage findings that promise to not only improve food safety, but arrest a major killer of hospital patients. On an overcast summer's day, Professor Clokey is at a farm in Eastleigh, wearing a dark blue cotton dress and looking at a pig pen with about a half a dozen animals in it. The swine are huge, One boar probably weighs close to 500 pounds. But Professor Clokey isn't here to just visit a farm. She's hunting phages. It's not what's in the pigs that interests her, it's what's beneath them. It's a microbial treasure trove comprising soil and pig excrement.
We get viruses like flu, Ebola, AIDS, bacteria, their own viruses, known as phages. So that's what all our work's about, is trying to find these very specific bacterial viruses that we can then use to treat diseases in animals and humans. So
a quarter of a teaspoon of this smelly stuff will harbour tens of billions of bacteria and hundreds of billions of phages, which is why farm soils are fertile ground for Professor Clokey.
So it's a wonderful, natural, lovely microbial soup, all the bacteria feeding on the soil, playing all different roles, living off the nutrients, some of which are provided by the animals, which is why we often find viruses that target different bacteria that animals carry. In order to find good phages, we start off with a source of healthy animals and we search through the soils and feces that's associated with them, such as this sample here.
It's in material like this that Professor Clokey and colleagues made an important discovery back in the lab, a jumbo phage that can be added to pig feed to selectively weed out salmonella from animals' digestive tracts. The hope is that removing salmonella from its source in animals will safeguard food, and doing so will avoid the huge waste associated with dumping food in response to contamination and product recalls. And all of that will reduce the use of antibiotics both in animals and people, which fosters drug resistance.
Phages are an obvious thing that you could potentially use to manipulate the microbiome of an animal to remove pathogens or to promote a more healthy gut microbiome.
In a similar way, Professor Clokey is hoping to rid hospital patients of a major bacterial killer. Clostridioides difficile, or C. diff, causes almost 500,000 diarrheal illnesses and about 15,000 deaths annually in the United States alone. Older hospital patients are its prime victims. The miserable, life-derailing diarrheal disease that C. diff causes usually comes on after friendly intestinal bacteria have been annihilated by a course of antibiotics. Among people over 65 diagnosed with a healthcare-associated C. diff infection, 1 in 11 is dead within a month. The germ is also really hard to eliminate once you've had it. There's a 1 in 5 chance of it coming back. It took Professor Clokey and her team 3 years, tests on hundreds of stool specimens, and countless hours of digging up smelly black estuarine soils to finally find one. It was a major breakthrough to discover what appear under an electron microscope a little bit like alien creatures.
They look a little bit like somehow like they come from another world. They have these elegant symmetrical heads and then long sort of flowing tail fibers. They're just they look a little bit like a sort of rather unusual insect.
But with killer instincts, those long tail fibers will help the phage find and snare its prey. Once the bacteria is in its grips, the phage will inject its DNA into the cell.
And at that point, the bacteria is no longer a bacteria anymore. It's just we call it a viral factory. It's just making viral particles. After about half an hour, there'll be about maybe 50 fully formed viral particles in that cell. They then release different enzymes, which then break down that cell, and the cell will just burst open, and the phages will be released. Those new phages will find new cells, and the whole process will repeat itself over again.
It's like a biodegradable smart bomb, capable of eliminating a single bacterial target without affecting other beneficial bacteria.
So at least in theory, if you can get a few phages to the site of infection, you'll then have an in situ replication of that medicine to be able to wipe out the infection where it's needed. You can see it's very different to your sort of standard one compound antibiotic.
Lab experiments with animals that mimic the disease indicate that Professor Clokey's phages are adept at killing the main strains of C. diff that patients typically contract. They can also inhibit the bacteria when phages are administered days before animals are exposed to C. diff, which suggests they could potentially be given to vulnerable patients to prevent the disease. Professor Clokey is gathering the basic data needed to demonstrate the safety and efficacy of her phages. She says a prototype product could be ready in about 5 years. Meantime, researchers in other countries are forging ahead with patient studies aimed at identifying if and how phages could become part of routine medical care. Ironically, in some countries, they established that niche early last century. One of the earliest phage therapy centers is in Tbilisi, in the former Soviet Republic of Georgia. Known as the Eliava Institute, it was the hub for Soviet phage therapy research and production, and accumulated the world's largest phage library. It supplied the Red Army with thousands of treatments to prevent and treat dysentery and wound infections during World War II, though its products weren't subjected to the kinds of randomized controlled trials usually needed for regulatory approval. Here's Stephanie Strathdy again.
They were taken up very vigorously in the former Soviet Union and in parts of Eastern Europe, where they are used to this day, over-the-counter even.
Penicillin wasn't so readily available there compared with in the West, where antibiotics were considered easier to administer and store. There was also the association with communism during the Cold War that deterred phage research.
If you were into phage therapy, you were labeled a pinko commie. So this geopolitical bias was a major factor that really delayed the advances in phage therapy that we're starting to recoup now. I was surprised to find out that the U.S. military was working on phage, but it turns out that many different militaries, including the Belgian military, have been working on phage for quite some time.
Professor Strathdy's efforts to save her husband have already drawn attention to a largely neglected and somewhat mistrusted approach to treating infections. In February of 2019, the couple released a book about their ordeal. It's called The Perfect Predator, A Scientist's Race to Save Her Husband from a Deadly Superbug. They recently sold the movie rights to a big Hollywood name.
My husband's case was kind of considered to be a watershed moment in the strange history of phage therapy. He certainly wasn't the first person to be treated with phage therapy, but in the United States, he was the first person to receive intravenous phage therapy to treat a systemic superbug infection that was essentially pan-resistant. And that knowledge that intravenous phage therapy is safe, and those phages, even though we don't really know how they get where they need to go, they know. And so it's allowing many other cases to be treated. In fact, we estimate 40 to 50 people have been treated since Tom's case.
For Joel Grimwood, phages arrived just in the nick of time. A year and a half after his phage treatment that preceded his heart transplant, he says he feels like a different man. He has plans now for things he wouldn't have been able to do 2 years ago while fighting off infections and waiting for a surgery that never seemed was coming.
I'm becoming more active. They told me I can go swimming now, so that'll be fun. I'm not going to be going bare-chested on the beach, I'll tell you that. I'm going to have a t-shirt on or something. It looks like I got blown up.
Ironically, he's probably alive today because of explosions, the microscopic ones going on inside his body, thanks to phage therapy.
It saved my life. I guess it is a miracle in a way, and I feel that way. I tell my friends all the time, I'm just watching the miracle unfold.
While the cases of Joel Grimwood and Tom Patterson point to the promise of phage therapy to fight untreatable infections, they don't constitute scientific evidence that they work. The challenge is to apply all the acquired knowledge gathered over the past century to run coordinated, rigorous trials to prove what, if any, role phages can play in mitigating the antimicrobial resistance crisis. The clock is ticking. It's predicted that unless something drastic happens, one person will die every 3 seconds from a superbug infection by 2050. The world can't afford to wait more years to find out where the phages can help.
And that's it for this week's Prognosis. Thanks for listening. Do you have a story about healthcare in the U.S. or around the world? We want to hear from you. Find me on Twitter, @FayeCortez, or send me an email, mcortez@bloomberg.net. If you were a fan of this episode, please take a moment to rate and review us. It really helps new listeners find the show. And don't forget to subscribe. This episode was produced by Ethan Brooks. Our story editor was Rick Schein. Special thanks to John Lauerman, who helped with the reporting, and Drew Armstrong, our healthcare team leader. Francesca Levy is head of Bloomberg Podcasts. We'll be back next week with a new episode. See you then.